We suggest that everyone have at least a vocabulary of 9 human needs. I pick the number 9 after reading of research done by Manfred Max Neef, an economist from Chile. His whole system of economics is based on human needs. Manfred Max Neef and his colleagues evaluate the success of an economy in a radically different way than we do in the United States. In the United States, we measure the success on the measurements of the GNP, the gross national product, which essentially is how much money is made in certain areas. That system shows that it's successful when the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Manfred Max Neef's approach to economic success is based on whether human needs are met by all of the parties in the culture. So since his whole system of economy is based on human needs, he's gone to some trouble to research what are the basic human needs that need to be fulfilled if we're to have a safe, healthy, peaceful world. And he comes up with 9 needs. And the success of an economic system, as he would measure it, is how well these needs are met by everyone in the population. That really helped me because I had a list of about 50 words that I had gathered up to learn to develop my need vocabulary, and I realized that I had several words that were different ways of saying basically the same need. And I realized he's probably right, that we probably do just have about 9 needs that we need to get real good at being able to express to other people. So let me offer you what these 9 needs are that Manfred Max Neef is talking about, and I'll use more my language than his, but here are the needs that he comes up with. First, sustenance. And by that he means the basic physical needs such as food, air, water, shelter. Most people that I work with, they're pretty good at expressing those needs. I guess we do need to learn those pretty quickly or we wouldn't survive very long. The next need that Manfred Max Neef talks about is safety, protection. A third need, love. A fourth need, empathy. A fifth need, rest, recreation, play. Sixth need, a community, a warm community. Seventh need, creativity. And the last two needs are particularly important needs in terms of safety on our planet, peace on our planet. The eighth need is autonomy. Look in the newspaper on any given day and see how many wars are going on over this need of autonomy. We human beings have a strong need to choose our own way in life and not to have it dictated by others who tell us what we have to do. And when they do that, it threatens this very basic need of ours for autonomy. And that need is alive in us from a very early age on. Listen in on any family that has small children, and you'll often hear autonomy wars going on. The parent will say to the child, "You must do this," and the child says, "No." The parent said, "Did you hear me? You must do this." "No." That's an autonomy war. The child is hearing demands, and when we hear demands, it threatens this very basic need of ours to choose our own way in life. And the ninth need, Viktor Frankl, the Austrian psychiatrist, describes as perhaps the most important need, important in the sense of our living our lives fully. He calls this a need for meaning, need for purpose. When I'm using this word, I often describe it this way. It's our need to contribute to life, to see how our efforts have made people's lives richer, life on the planet richer. So what I recommend to people is to get those 9 needs into our own vocabulary. They may not be the words I just gave, words that you or the people that you're communicating with might use. But if so, then for each of these nine, try to find words that describe that in a way that you resonate to, that really captures for you that need. And then when you've developed a need vocabulary that works for you, then you may see that it may not work for the others with whom you are communicating with daily. For example, if you have a 3-year-old in your house, the word autonomy may not work for the child, even though you may know what this word means and it resonates to your need for autonomy. But the 3-year-old may not use the word autonomy, but they have the need for autonomy because all human beings have the same needs. That's very important to be conscious of, that all human beings have the same needs. So even though we may have different vocabularies for describing these needs, everybody has the same needs. So to really connect in a way that promotes compassion between ourselves and others, we need to be able to express needs in a language that the other people can resonate to. So take this list of 9 need words that you resonate to. The words describe the needs for you. But then, if you're living with a 3-year-old, figure out how to say each of these needs in a way that the 3-year-old can resonate to. If you're working with street gang members, learn how to say these needs in a language that they can resonate to. If you're working with college professors, translate it into their language. In other words, if we really want to connect with human beings in a way in which we enjoy each other and enjoy contributing to each other's well-being, we need to be very literate with the language of needs. And any time we find ourselves wanting to criticize, to translate that criticism into our needs that isn't being met, we are far more likely to get our needs met when we speak our needs than when we tell people what's wrong with them. So what I'm saying is that we evaluate behavior best according to the principles of nonviolent communication, where best means in a way that promotes compassionate giving, people enjoying learning from each other, that we are much more likely to promote connections of that sort, speaking clear observations, feelings, and needs. And to avoid words like right, wrong, good, bad, appropriate, inappropriate, etc., etc., especially words like should, shouldn't, have to, can't. Now, when I say this, very often when I'm working with teachers, they get very uncomfortable because they can't imagine how they can do their job as teachers without using words like right, wrong, good, bad, appropriate, inappropriate. For example, I was working with teachers in one school system on the Eastern Seaboard in the United States, and the teachers were very confused. They said to me, "Marshall, how can we go through a day without telling students whether what they're doing is right or wrong? Our job as teachers is to evaluate students and to judge their performance." I said, "Yes, judgments and evaluations are very helpful if they're a language of life. But when we put it in the form of a language of right, wrong, good, bad, that's promoting a system of domination that I believe is contributing to violence on the planet." Well, they often need me to show them concretely in the situations in which they're working what this would look like. So, for example, in this school system that I was working with, they wanted me to take over several classes for a day so they could see how I would evaluate students using nonviolent communication. So I took over some math classes and some reading classes, etc., for the day. And the school system had me followed around all day with a video camera, making a videotape of what I did with the students so that this could be used to train the teachers in how to evaluate according to nonviolent communication principles of evaluation. I worked with students for about 4 hours that day in different classes. I went back to that school system a month later And the superintendent of schools was talking to me before the day started, and he said, "That videotape you made, Marshall, last time, showing the teachers other ways of evaluating, beside using words like good, bad, normal, abnormal. Boy, that has really motivated a lot of teachers to want to change their way of communicating. You know, we made 4 hours of videotape following you around, Marshall, but we only use the first 10 minutes. What you did in that first 10 minutes with a young boy really motivates teachers to change their language." I couldn't remember what happened in that first 10 minutes, so he got the videotape and showed it to me. Here's what happened. I came across a young boy who had just added up a page of arithmetic problems that the teacher had given them to add up. This boy was 9 years old. I saw that he added up 9 plus 6 equals 14. And here's how I evaluated what he did. I said to him, "Hey, buddy, I'm confused about how you got this answer. I get a different one." He started to cry. I said, "Hey, what's happening? Why are you crying?" He said, "I got it wrong." Notice I didn't say he had it wrong. I told him that I was confused because I had a different answer, and I was wondering how he got his. But he'd already been trained for 3 years in a school system that makes people focus their attention on how they're judged by authority. My experience is this takes the joy out of learning when we are judged in a way that implies we're stupid if we don't get it right and we're intelligent if we do. Notice my evaluation enabled me to be honest. I was confused. I did get a different answer. I wanted to see how he got his, and I wanted to be able to show him another way of doing it if his way and my way were different. In nonviolent communication, we not only want to evaluate without any criticism or blame, we also want to evaluate without any praise or compliments. I'll be talking more about that in the 9th session when we talk about how to celebrate and express sincere gratitude. I hope then to show what danger exists in using praise and compliments as well as words that criticize and blame.